But of course, we have amazing activists on the ground who have the ability to do tremendous work in lots of different areas. But New York City has certainly grown, as we've said, exponentially in that department over the past few years. And one of those people who has played a key role in that is your slate mate and friend, Lauren Ashcraft. She has done an exceptional job running for Congress. And now, of course, she has been working, I believe, as a surrogate for Diane Morales' campaign for mayor. And she has a lovely podcast that she's going to talk to us about. So without further ado, we are bringing on a super califragilisticexpialidocious person to our podcast.
Yeah.
Lauren Ashcraft.
Hi. Oh my gosh, it's so good to see your faces again.
Hello.
Hey. How are you?
I'm so good. I love the chalk art of my name in the background. That's really cute. That's adorable.
Thank you. I want to tell you the only other person since we've been doing this, how many times? I mean, every time I do it.
Is it the length of the name or something?
No. Well, no. Okay. Lauren, arguably, Ashcraft is longer. It's 8 letters, usually 7 I can do pretty easily, but 8 I get. But the only other person who's ever commented and appreciated it was Nina Turner.
Right. Oh my gosh. Nina.
And then you are the only, like, I just think that's interesting.
To be in the same sentence as Nina Turner, I am honored.
I'm just saying she was the first person, and now you are the second person that has appreciated my little thing.
Nina and I are vibing, and I really love that. Thank you. You made my day.
So for anybody, this is Lauren, who ran for Congress in New York's 12th, right? It was 12.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yes.
And is now working on, tell everyone like what you're doing now politically, and then we'll get into the show.
Well, I do a lot. So I actually work on a city council campaign right now. Her name is Julia Foreman, and she is running in District 26, which is where I live. So it's really fun to try to help the next person that I find amazing represent me. And then, I also am helping by volunteering for Diane Morales, who I also hope to have representing me. So you might see a trend. I really like bold women.
Well, that's how you get things done.
Right? I mean, you're my friend. I ran for Congress. I really like bold women who run for office. And whatever I can do to support, I'm really happy.
I think it'd be very important to share, as a lot of people really need to know. And if you can hit the retweet and like button and all that, guys, just get this out there. Lauren, if you could do that as well. You know, we want to get as many people watching as we can. You know, I've always said, you know, I know a lot of people are not completely enthralled with AOC and what she's done, you know, as of late. And obviously there are arguments to be made about her strategy, whether it's effective or not. But one thing I think cannot be disputed is how effective her victory over Joe Crowley has been for the progressive movement in New York City, and what that has meant for a multitude of different candidates, such as yourself, such as obviously Jamal Bowman, who's also slate mate and ended up winning, Mondaire Jones as well. And now, of course, you have Diane Morales running for the mayoral race in New York City. If you could talk about the impact that AOC's run had and what it's meant for the progressive movement over the last few years and how you feel New York City stands at this point, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think it's our home. And I think I ran in New York 12. She represents New York 14. So for me, it was really, really great to see her at rallies and to kind of see that energy. We learned about AOC, my partner and I. He got a postcard under his door when she first ran. And that was, I had never seen somebody that young run for something, and it just got my wheels turning. So the impact that she's had on people, I don't think you can really measure it. She gets a lot of shit from a lot of people all the time. And like, I understand we can never really truly agree with one person 100% of the time. Jen, I'm sure we don't even, but I love you.
No. Yeah, no. And you know, I always defend, I always say, look, you know, I mean, it's just punching sideways to go after her. There's no point to it. She doesn't take corporate money. She does seem to be on the right side of issues. Strategically, she's done some things that I find maybe a little bit naive on her part. I don't attribute any ill will to her. I don't attribute anything nefarious or sellout or anything like that. I'm not psyched that she gave money to military industrial complex Democrats. You know, that doesn't psych me. If that were my representative, I'd probably send an email saying as much, you know, that I don't appreciate that. But I don't have, like, there's no beef with her. She's just trying to do the best she can.
Yeah. And I think also one of the things that I bring up sometimes is there's over 400 other people in Congress that are representing us. And the fact that we're focused on her 100% of the time raises a lot of eyebrows for me. She is a, 30-year-old woman of color?
Yeah.
like there are 70-year-olds that have been doing the same terrible shit for 40 years. And nobody even knows their name. Like, my parents are represented by Glenn Thompson. Like, does anyone know who he is?
No.
We should get him out of office.
Well, and here's the thing I think that people don't realize, you know, you talk about, yes, she's young. And I do think that's a big factor in it. And as somebody who's old enough to be her mother, I think about that there is a certain wisdom and maturity. Like, so Nina brings something to the table that AOC wouldn't have based on just, there's just life skills and experience, right? But I do think that's one of the reasons why it's so interesting that people are so harsh on her. They're being harshest on the person who's been there basically the shortest amount of time.
Yeah.
Like, the people that have been sitting there for generations are the people that are the problem.
This is also why people put way too much faith into, you know, there's hero worship. Especially in politics, it is very dangerous. And you see people, I mean, you see people right now with the way they defend Biden and the way they defend Pelosi. And it's like, if they do something good, you give them credit for it. But when they are habitually bad, you defending them just makes it worse. And I think the key is really, you know, if we focus on issues, core issues, you know, I'm hearing that there's a very strong push in New York right now in the state legislature to push forward some type of a single payer, you know, if it's a public option. I don't want to mess it up, so I don't want to you know, misconstrue exactly what it is. But if you could talk about, you know, where universal health care stands in New York right
now. We're sure you're involved somehow.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm really excited about it. I personally, I domestic partnered, I don't know if that's the right word. My amazing partner made it legal with me during my congressional run, so I didn't die. Now we're getting married, so we're doing it.
I knew that. Well, look, I've already I texted her. I knew.
Yeah, no, you're wonderful.
When are you getting married, by the way?
August 27th.
Nice.
I'm so excited, but we're doing that out of love. But he did this for me so that I wouldn't die. But I think, like, the fact that we had to have that conversation is really upsetting to me. And and I think it's crazy that, like, I have family in so many different countries. Like, I'm part Japanese, so, like, my family will say to me, like, oh, I went to the doctor today, I got surgery, guess how much it cost me. And I'm like, I know where this is going, $0, right? They're like, yeah, $0, how'd you know, ha ha. And I'm like,
yeah, it's not a laughing matter in this country anymore.
It must be nice. It must be really nice. I got my annual exam blood test, and I got a $2,000 bill. So that was from my checkup. So it's really fun here. And in New York, we're taking some strides to make sure that doesn't happen to us. It's called the New York Health Act, and it just made it through the assembly. So where it is right now is in the New York State Senate, and we have a supermajority now so that Andrew Cuomo cannot block every ounce of progress. And we actually just, we made cannabis legal in the state as well, which is great, super great.
And you ended qualified immunity.
Yeah, we're taking a lot of different steps forward, but like the cannabis, Andrew Cuomo, he's getting all this credit, but people forget that he was the one to block it for so long. And now that we both know Lindsay Boylan, she's a badass, brave woman who came forward about his sexual harassment. And if it weren't for this entire line of complaints against him, I honestly don't think that we would be getting all this stuff passed. He just is trying to move the news away from how guilty he is. So we have a lot of stuff happening in New York. good and bad stuff. And I am really excited. I am not running for Congress this time around, but I will be joining a committee to help choose a challenger for Andrew Cuomo.
So, very exciting.
Well, I know who I would like to see run again, but of course, you know, that's a decision she's going to have to make, Ms. Nixon. Certainly, if somebody else, maybe Zephyr might be thinking about it. Maybe you might be thinking about it.
No, she is not. Yeah. She wants to have a life.
Yeah, she
wants. Lauren wants to have a life.
That's why I'm cut out for politics, because I don't have a wife. Exactly. This is my life. I don't have kids. I'm not married. I'm single. I can do whatever I want. Right. So yeah, I can do this nonsense.
Well, Lauren has a life.
But hey, those of you out there who think that California is the bastion of progressive politics in this country, no. New York is where it's at.
It is right now. It hasn't been, but we've had people like Vocal New York is an amazing organization that's been advocating for legalized cannabis for years. And we have so many different organized, like Citizens Action of New York, so many organizations that have been pushing for the New York Health Act to move forward. So this is really, it's been going on for a long time, and also a lot of really cool assembly members and state senators that are great advocates and partners. But we've had Andrew Cuomo sitting there just stopping everything and harassing women. So that's amazing.
And for people like for us in Florida, we have an extremely Republican legislature to the point where basically the Democrats, the best they can do is sometimes damage control. Like they're not pushing anything forward. Like no, there's nothing going forward. It's all just playing defense. So we don't have to, and then we have a Republican governor who will shoot that, just jump right in with them. So like nothing really is good. You have a Democrat governor who's shutting down the stuff that's good. That's just
Democrats.
Exactly. And it's just really interesting. And they are making progress, and we're clearly not.
You know, we saw the defense that a lot of people put up front wise for Trump for a very long time. Can you talk about what it's been like? Because it does seem that there is definitely a contingent of New Yorkers who basically are just blind sycophants to Cuomo. And whether that's because they may be older and they're very sympathetic to Mario Cuomo's legacy, and he clearly was a better, you know, governor than his son is. But nonetheless, there just seems to be this this hyperpartisan tribalism that I think is extremely dangerous these days. And they're really just willing to cast it aside, even at, you know, the expense of so many brave women like Lindsay, who had the courage to come forward and basically put herself out there in a way that I'm sure she's still dealing with it at this point, from men and women. So I'm curious as to how that's been reflective in this whole very, tribalistic period of politics that we're in right now, that, like I said, I think it's at like a boiling point where you just don't know where it's going to go.
So I have like a very personal story about this, because I've been petitioning out on the street to get my candidate into city council, and you have to ask someone if they're registered Democrat, which is fun. You forget that in New York, we actually have a lot of Republicans. So I forget that, which is very bad of me. But you walk around, you walk up to strangers, and you ask them if they're registered Democrat. I cannot tell you how many times people would be like, absolutely not after what you guys did to Andrew Cuomo. So I don't know what's going on there, but like,
Wow. Voters
are super, like, we are not in the same group. Like,
right.
I don't know.
They're Cuomoites. They're not Democrats. They're just wherever he is. They just support him. They're not necessarily party people.
You know, we had on Thursday, or Monday, on our last podcast, we actually had somebody from Twitch come on our stream and basically say, I'm an older Democrat, and I really don't like what you young people are doing trying to take over this party. And then they proceed to get into this. I asked them, I said, well, what specifically do you have an issue with? And they start getting into, well, you know, I don't have a problem with fracking or this. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, there you go.
He was pro fossil fuel. I'm like, well, I don't know why you think that represents the Democratic Party in some way.
Well, the Democratic Party, as it currently is constructed,
yes,
we're trying to change.
But it wasn't supposed to be that.
I really think that if you could get away from having to say, are you Democrat or Republican, and just focus on issues, that it just eases.
So you can only get signatures from people that are party affiliated?
There's like certain circumstances that are very strange. Like if you're a notary, you can sign regardless of your party. So it's like little things like that, which are
and this weird. Is just to get on the ballot.
Just to get on the ballot.
Anybody can sign to get on the ballot. It doesn't have to be party person here.
Okay, well, then,
and we have closed primaries.
So in New York, you could be any party affiliation to sign the petition, or you need
to
be in
the
Democrat?
No, you have to be in the party.
Oh, wow. See, down here in Florida, you could be any.
He's not like Neanderthals.
You know, that's how
it's time for you to get on, but they can't vote for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's only you have to be a registered Democrat to sign a Democrat's petition here, unless you're a notary. Whatever.
Notary.
Yeah, well, you could. I think you have to be registered in New York, though.
I'm sure I do.
One last political issue that I would like to talk about before we get to the podcast. Lauren has a lovely podcast, as you can see, Biden Commentary. We highly recommend that everybody goes there, like, subscribe, watch some videos, make some comments. Got to boost up our buddy here. But one last thing that I do want to talk about, which I think is important. We saw what the establishment was willing to do to Bernie during the primary, the lengths that they were willing to go to make sure that he did not become the nominee, the cultivating of every single candidate and resource that they could to basically make sure that it looked like Biden was the one and Bernie was just out there in the wind. The two non-establishment candidates in the mayoral race are Diane Morales and Andrew Yang. And I do believe right now, it seems pretty clear to me that the Democratic Party machine of New York City is trying to get everybody behind Scott Stringer. That's what it appears is happening. Now, I could be wrong because I'm not in the city. I'm only looking at...
He wants to know if you know the inside scoop to what's going on there.
So I am like all cards in on Diane Morales. I know Andrew Yang. We've talked. I find him to be a very compassionate human. But some of the things that he has a lot of gaps and doesn't seem to quite get. Like, he went after little mom and pop street vendors last week, I think it was, and just seems to be like a little bit disconnected from what the real issues are here. So Andrew, if you're listening, I like sincerely mean this from the bottom of my heart. I would love to talk with you, because if you have a chance to represent me, I would love to help you reprioritize. And until that happens, I'm just like the only candidate that I'm really pushing right now is Diane Morales, who I've met at protests.
We had her on. She came on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad. She's lovely. Yeah.
So people should check out that interview.
In
our little library.
And Diane is, look, I saw the numbers. I mean, she's got a lot of cash on hand now. So she's definitely got, you know, and Semeles Lopez is working with the campaign now as well, I believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some more of the BNC, you know, alums that are getting on board. And yeah, you know, listen, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I know people don't like to talk about future plans or anything like that, but if for whatever reason Diane does not win the primary
race, strategy,
she has got to run against Hakeem Jeffries, because I think that her name recognition will be big enough where she is the type of viable challenger in his district, because we all know that he's the one that basically is lying in wait until Pelosi decides that she's going to step away. Mm. And I think if there is an opportunity to get him, this is assuming, of course, that things don't work out.
Spends his free time planning these things for other people. He has a plan.
Think of it this way. Mayor Pete is already planning 2028. He is already way ahead of everybody else in terms of like what he's going to do. So I think we have to start thinking like they think and think, all right, well, we got to be strategic in terms of what we do. And I definitely think, oh, that's beautiful. So we got to
put that up.
Wonderful news.
Yay!
Diane Morales is just endorsed by the Sunrise Movement. So that is, if you think that's not significant,
it's very significant.
That is significant, because that is the ultimate.
They put in volunteer man hours,
phone banking, text banking, and the like. They are That was the one endorsement that Jen did not get against Wasserman Schultz that I really wish that she did get, and I think would have made a huge difference in the outcome. Maybe not a one.
We digress.
But that, without question, for Diane is tremendous. That is 1,000%.
Yeah, she's amazing. And like, just the level of human that she is. Like, my cat died in November, and she checked in on me to make sure. Like, we know each other. I know she's like, she's been very busy, obviously. But yeah. Like, the fact that she was like, "Are you okay?" And she like knew that would really gut me. I'm even wearing a demon cat shirt, so like, you can't tell I love cats. But she knew that, and she checked in on me. She's just so real. You know, you've met her now.
Yeah, no, I think she's great. And I've said it many times. And I, even though I'm like you, and I like Andrew Yang, and I've spoken with him a few times, and I think he's very sincere, and I think he means well. And if I lived there, I would be voting for Diane Morales.
But that is the beautiful part about having ranked choice voting.
And yeah. Let's be very clear on that, people. That's a very important thing to know going into this.
And that is one of the mistakes that a lot of people,
I would be her one
making.
And put him too. Yeah. That's what I would do. I would implore
anybody to do that, because the one thing that New York City unfortunately has had since the days of Fiorella LaGuardia, and this is going back 60, 70 years, is you basically have a party machine that runs New York City. Even when Giuliani and Bloomberg were mayor, there was the same problem. And this is something where having an outsider like Diane, or even an outsider like Andrew, I think will have tremendous impact on what you'll be able to accomplish in the city.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of ranked choice. We don't have that option.
No, but what we do think that we need to get that on the ballot here, and that's
Definitely, I think ranked choice voting.
Well, you'd be surprised. We almost passed jungle primaries here in Florida. Like, that's how, like, if you're able to get that going, and I think jungle primaries is completely nuts. But if you're able to even make that type of an impact, I can only imagine that ranked choice voting is something that, if we were able to get it on the ballot, probably would pass. But then again, we did pass a $15 minimum wage, and the Florida GOP does everything in their capacity to make sure that that never comes to
every pass. Time we pass something, they try to undermine it with different legislation.
And, like Jeff Brandis. And not only do they try to undermine it, but when I tell you, the Florida GOP is cut from a completely different cloth.
Yeah,
they
can't
purposely
understand.
Go after the most vulnerable with their legislation. Like, if you had any idea what they
put on. And it's like our Dem reps are always just playing defense.
But with that said, you know, we do want to continue to build this network. You know, the one thing that ultimately ends up happening, as I'm sure you're aware, with a lot of these online channels, these podcasts that people start, very often people don't want to check their ego at the door. They don't recognize that we have to build these networks all over the place, because corporate media, regardless of whether they're, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, they are always going to work together to crush non-corporate power like we're trying to take.
Yeah.
So if you can talk about your new podcast, Biden Commentary,
which is so cute. And well, talk about where it came from, because like us, you know, you ran and you had like a platform sort of going. So talk a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh. Thank you guys. I'm really continually moved by everyone's kindness to help get the word out. So thank you. Yes, I do have a new podcast. It's called Biting Commentary. It's on YouTube, but I also stream it to Twitter. Sunday nights, Eastern at 8 p.m. And it is called Biting Commentary because if you follow me at all at Vote Ashcraft, you probably know that I have pretty straightforward takes. And I also really like to eat food. So I do both. I eat food and spit some hot takes on my new podcast. And I have guests that I really would like to elevate. Jen, I hope you come on sometime.
Oh, I'd be totally happy to come on.
8 p.m. on Sundays?
Yes, 8 p.m. on Sundays. If you follow me at Vote Ashcraft, you can tune in there on Twitter. But
when it's done, though, people, because you don't always get people necessarily live. So, you know, especially when you have like an interview or a guest. So you'll still have your episodes, though, right? Like people can still watch. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go to YouTube, it's Biting Commentary. Our two episodes are there. So
who have you had on so far? Who was your first guest?
Yeah, my first guest was Andres Bernal, and he was so forgiving because we had a bunch of tech issues. The first, we're totally live. as you guys are.
We're all, twice a week. It's live.
We're faking it till we make it, baby.
I mean, it's like, it's ballsy. I love it. It's, I love just, you know, being authentic and being out there. Our first guest was Andres, and he talked about MMT with me and was so gracious because we dropped his call three times. But the second guest, it's so sweet to have people on that I really care about. We had my really, really good friend, Ed Pokropski, who produces the Asian Comedy Festival. And we talked about, I'm part Japanese, he is Korean. And we talked about what it's like to
be practically twins.
Yeah. We're having a lot of fun. And he's producing an amazing show that highlights Asian American talent right now, which is great. So definitely follow at Asian Comedy Fest, which is Ed. And then on this Sunday, we're having Kat Bresler at People for Bernie. And she will be talking about what it means to be on the community board in New York City, which is the most local level of government here. So more local than city council is something called a community board, where people get to serve and make advisory decisions at the very local level. So we want to talk about that.
Yeah, you don't even want to know.
There's advisory committees at the city commission level, but there's no power, like there's nothing, there's no there. It's almost like just a token thing.
It's not that I don't think it could happen. It's that I just think that there are people who are just waiting for somebody to really step up and lead the charge. And that's kind of just how it is in a lot of ways. You know, in Florida, I think Florida's ground zero for a real economic populist uprising because of all the issues that we do have. There's really this old guard in the Democratic Party. Wasserman Schultz may be in her mid-50s, but she's been in politics for 30 years, starting next year. So when you're around for that long, when it's a career, you don't have ambition to make things better. It's all about, I'm just comfortable and I'm going to stick with
it. It's just maintaining the status quo. They just got to maintain their
little seat. And so the same is true for a lot of the, not the city commission per se, but the county commission, absolutely. And a lot of the other representatives that are there, which is why, as we know, you know, Representative Alcee Hastings, you know, did unfortunately pass away recently. And now you are going to see everyone and their mother running for that seat.
There's vulture. It's like vultures on a carcass.
Because whoever wins that seat could easily sit there for 30 years themselves. Yep. And that's the problem with the political system that we have, especially in this state. And so when we see the momentum that's building where you are, it's really a beautiful sight to see, because we wish we had that.
Yeah.
Down here.
We're looking at it like sort of a blueprint. I mean, like I wanted to ask you, like, so you're doing this weekly, and you'll see where it goes. We started out doing once a week as well, and now we're up to twice a week because we were getting
so many. Shout out to you, Jen, because you helped me get set up. You took a bunch of calls to help me figure out all this tech stuff. So,
oh my God, I don't know what I helped. Look, I just tell you what we did. Of course, and look how you had technical difficulties. That's because it was me who was helping. That's probably why.
No, you really helped. I love this whole concept of women supporting women, and
I'm on that Catch Fire advisory board.
Yeah, is it the Savage Joy?
Ava's group. Ava.
Ava.
And so there's 14 people on the board, so we vote for endorsements and stuff, and I'm supposed to be interviewing Michaela. I have to be interviewing Michaela for an endorsement.
We got to get her.
Totally unbiased.
No, but you know,
is it okay that I know her? I mean, you know, but the truth is everybody on our board is kind of, it wouldn't matter who it was. It's all people that, right. It wouldn't matter.
I think it's very important also that, you know, you do keep in touch, you build these relationships, especially with the people who ran on the BNC slate. I just see very often that, you know, that doesn't ultimately end up happening. And I think it's very important that we do recognize that having these relationships, especially cross country, really does make a difference, because the more you know, the more people you know, the easier it is to build momentum for, you know, whatever issue, cause, or even candidate, you know, that may be running. And the fact that you guys have, you know, really, you know, kept good communication, I think is great. Same with Michaela, same with Ava.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, Jason was on here at one point. Jason Call was on here.
And we had
Isaiah.
Isaiah James, you know, who's running in New York's ninth. Yeah. I mean, you know, and how can you not love that guy?
I mean, and the thing, the thing is that we give platform to basically anybody who's on our team, because that's sort of the point. But did you happen to catch at the beginning of this episode my new series called The Kente Cloth Tales?
Oh my God, no.
Did you not see The Kente Cloth Tales? Is it okay if I share it with Lauren?
Yeah.
Okay, because this pleases me. I've been very into Canva.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
So it's an anthology of tone deafness, The Kente Cloth Tales. And I actually started today's episode. Today was the first of them. And today I went to play the video of Nancy Pelosi's reaction to the Chauvin conviction.
Oh my gosh.
And I went to play it, but apparently my audio didn't work because, again, technical difficulties.
Thank you for sacrificing.
But yourself. So now I basically have this. Anytime someone does something of the complete tone deaf variety, I'm going to make it into the Kente Cloth Tales. So,
I love that. And you made that in Canva. I'm very impressed, Jen.
I do all sorts
of
stuff.
Jen has a real skill, Lauren, for graphic.
Oh my gosh.
Like, she did that. I mean, that's pretty cool.
You're making me look cooler than I am.
I like how you were able to put the generational change logo
on
the
very crafty. Like, really, I've gotten really good at this. Yeah. Okay, well, I was gonna say, Lauren, if you want, we could bootlick or you know, whatever.
You know what, Lauren? You're like gonna become what I would call what do they call it? A friend of the show?
You need to be friend of the
show. Yeah, you're going to be friend of the
show. And you could be like, our New York correspondent. But
if you
appreciate the graphics, you should definitely stay for this week's bootlicker. So as you see on your graphic, we say change maker. So we have I keep a chronology of guests. And we're in the process of doing our webpage. And so on our webpage, there'll be like change makers, and there'll be your picture and a link to whatever your project is.
Oh, how cute.
Right. So, and it could be political people. It could be, you know, activists. It could be authors. You know, I try to get authors if I read books I like. So that's the change maker. And then we talk about the weekly bootlicker. And the weekly bootlicker this week, the other way. There.
Okay. Our weekly bootlicker could be none other than, of course, James Cobble. James Cobble had to be the bootlicker of the week.
This is what we do. So every week there's our bootlicker. But this one in particular is really cool because, move that so we could see the thing. Yeah, you got to move.
You're doing great.
Yeah.
So,
and I this was totally fun. Yeah.
I love that. And also, please, dear God, don't let me become a bootlicker so that I don't end up like this on your show.
You would never be
not
a bootlicker.
And again, it's so easy to just pick on, you know, like this person, that person.
No, but we do it for people that are really sycophants to the establishment.
And Carville,
there's nothing you would do that would ever put you in that category.
Now, for those who are watching who may not be aware, and the reason why we picked Mr. Carville as our bootlicker of the week, he was on with Brian Williams on MSNBC the other day and was basically going after Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yeah, easy enough. Everyone can go after
low-hanging fruit.
And then he wants to talk about how we've got AOC on our side, even though she's a little naive, thinking that we're going to give everybody health care.
No, she said that we're going to give everybody health insurance.
Oh, excuse. And you're just like, this guy, I think he just likes being the center of attention, and he always knows when he's going to be coming out with some stupid line. Ugh. He's married. Not only is he one of the top bundler, or I guess what you would call a consultant strategist for the Democratic Party, you know, because he came up with the Democrats' own version of the third way Southern strategy when he was, I don't know what his title was for Bill Clinton's 92 election, but he had a significant role. Yeah. Here's the reason why Bill Clinton became president in 1992. Two words, Ross Perot. That's why he became president. So whatever strategy you think you came up with, that's not why you won. But nevertheless, this is a guy who's been running off of that for the past 30 years. And not only is he one of the highest paid consultants in the Democratic Party, his wife, Madeline. She's one of the top consultants as well for the GOP.
Well, right. That to me has always almost been, it really does seem like a grift. It really does. It seems like it really does seem ridiculous.
This is a grift.
It's standing up though, right?
Oh, if you see the way that they live. Oh no, you have to see the way they live. They have, I think, like three different homes.
Oh my God, they live like royalty. They did a whole spread in like Vanity Fair or something. Oh yeah, they live like their house. On the inside looks like what Trump's house looks like on the inside.
Yeah, no, tacky as tacky can get. Yeah. Expensive
and elitist, but tacky, and completely. Yeah.
Like it's
okay,
just
so like politics shouldn't look like that. If they do, I could spin this around. There's too many wires, but you would see my like 4x4 apartment.
Yeah.
But that's the point. This is supposed to be a term of service, not a career. And I mean, and that's ultimately what we're trying to do is transform politics into service. That's our catchphrase.
And they are what you would truly call the swamp of DC. Like that is what they are.
Anybody who is in the Clinton's pool of sycophantism is definitely part of the problem.
Well, and again, for them, it's all about money. So basically, you could be a Democrat or you could be a Republican. If you're a Democrat and you want the consultant help of the highest order, you go to Mr. Carville. And if you want the GOP help, you go to Mary. And that's the way it goes. And that's this political, power brokering that they have established over the past 3-4 decades. But here's a guy who just can't help himself to basically say, you fools, you think you're going to get health care in this country?
Health insurance.
Health insurance. How's that going to help
me? She thinks everybody should get health insurance. How naive.
What use? How much corporate money is he going to lose if we had a universal healthcare system in this country? Because that's
my whole thing is like the people that would be most affected by that negatively. Like you can live multiple lifetimes and not bat an eye if you get like zero more dollars. Like the big CEOs of these huge health insurance companies, like they have just raked it in. You don't have to worry for the rest of your life. But like us, who are just like really, really waiting to the nail and like trying hard to advocate for the New York Health Act just because like people die without it.
You know what? Wait, I was just going to let you know. So we had Wendell Potter on last week. And do you know who I'm talking about? And we were talking about healthcare executives that were raking in the bucks.
Yeah.
And he is someone that is, Peter was speaking with him today. I'm working on the same kind of healthcare legislation in his state of Pennsylvania. That's where he is.
All right. So I've come up with a name. I'm going to put it out there.
He's right. Branding and marketing is everything to him. The people healthcare.
Speaking of branding and marketing.
You see what I have to deal with.
You know, I really have to come on here and let all of you know that everything is about marketing. It's really incredible. And when you come up with a great idea, like Make America Great Again, you repeat it 1,000 times and everybody believes you because it's a really great idea. When you think of me, you think of Make America Great Again. Is that what you think of?
That's gosh, you're giving me like flashbacks.
It's not good.
Guys have him down there now. He's just in Florida these days.
I just strolled over from Mar-a-Lago.
He's the king of Mar-a-Lago. Yeah. That's what he called.
Well, I've been writing my Trumpstitution. It's the law of the land, and it's a really great.
He's creating a Trumpstitution.
Oh, it's really, really great.
Oh my God.
45 laws that basically protect me from any prosecution. It's really incredible. And I'm totally.
He's going to call you and say that you have good ideas.
Oh, no, I have great ideas, and you can't extradite me to New York. It's totally not going to happen. Total non-extradition from the state of Florida. It's really incredible, and that's one of the laws.
All right, make
see,
him
marketing,
go away.
Really, really great. Just wanted to say hello. You're a lovely lady.
I'm going to smudge.
Sorry, I'm not in New York anymore.
Go away.
I'm going to pull out my really sage. Sage.
This is the nonsense, the shenanigans. And actually, if he could get it together, we're working on a new character that I think is going to be really entertaining.
Yes.
Oh, so my gosh.
We can't say yet. No, because I think that could be really funny.
No, but I got a few.
Pull it out next time I'm on.
But I hope you enjoyed it, even if you really didn't like it. So, you know,
it was enjoyable in the same sense that I like to watch horror movies.
Okay.
I'm scared, but like also entertained.
I'll take that as a compliment.
But your show is going to be dealing with issues like we are. It's going to be a commentary on what's going on in the news and in politics. Mm-hmm.
So assuming that there's no copyright issue here, because obviously I think this is very catchy. This would be for the state of Pennsylvania. What do you guys think about this name for the statewide initiative to have single-payer healthcare in Pennsylvania?
See, nobody cares that much about the name of it. Like, that's what I told you. It's just not that big of a thing. People might be confused
because, like, Penn State is a university.
That's what I said. And he didn't like that.
Well, Penn State University.
Are you gonna ban me from the show now?
No, that's what I said.
No, because we only want yes people on our show that just agree.
It doesn't matter. I think just get the people.
Great idea.
People healthcare. So I think that. So are we? We're gonna help with this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Pennsylvania is also a great state because we don't really, you know, you need one of those states where it's definitely got a rural part to it, much like New York State has. But of course, I don't know what type of roadblocks you're going to hit in New York. I know that Pennsylvania, having the ability to communicate with Wendell, who's, you know, just, I mean, the type of context.
I mean, definitely you should be mirroring what they're doing in places that are having some success.
Yes,
so if it's New York or whole Washington.
But one of the things that ultimately doesn't get focused on enough is that there's also a lot of people on the left that do have an anti-business streak, and that's not good. And you have to focus on areas like, for example, small and even big business, because for them, it's a financial incentive to have universal health care. You don't want to have to pay for your employees' health care if you can avoid it. So I would think just that alone is one of the easiest ways to sell it, because essentially, you know, they're all the people who don't want the system to change are selling it from the perspective of you're just wanting government takeover of healthcare. No, what we want is government funded healthcare that doesn't have for-profit middlemen that have no reason to exist. The second that happens is when everything changes on the positive for everybody. Like you said, you had a serious health issue. You don't need a $2,000 bill. What you need is care. That is what it is for, because you can't function, you can't live without it. So to me, like you said,
sounds like they might get this through there. I'm very excited for you. You know, we're going to be going down with the ship down here in Florida.
Well, like you said, it's
Florida.
Come be my neighbor.
Yeah, right.
I can't afford to live in New York.
Yeah, New York's expensive.
Neither can we.
Yeah, well, you know, and I have
broom closets, you know, those cost a lot of money in those.
Yeah, And I hate to say this and in any way other, like, it's not sort of a snotty way. I couldn't live how close quarters you guys live. And by you guys, I mean anybody that's not in the millionaire class in the city. Okay.
I guarantee you, though, even though it's definitely a colder climate, Jen would definitely love Dutchess County.
No. I love cold. Cold is not my issue. Cold. I don't have a problem with cold. I could live in cold. I'm a mountain girl.
No, if you
I have no problem with cold. I have a problem with that close to that many people and shared walls and shared buildings. And it's just not for me. Like I would live in a tiny house van situation and be perfectly content before I would want to be in an apartment. So it isn't like a luxury thing. It's a privacy. It's a privacy thing.
My neighbors have all heard me sing and I'm sorry for them. And we've shared cockroaches and probably many other things.
Yeah. See,
so
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. They like come through your drain holes.
It's so gross.
I always think about like, oh, you just came from my neighbor and now you're here.
I think that you have an infestation. We get palmetto bugs here, which are basically roaches that fly. And they're bigger. It's really gross.
Oh yeah. Those things.
But I'm on a really big, like I'm on an acre. And so we get things. Mm-hmm. There's critters, you know, like we have lizards and toads and iguanas and
alligators
and, you know, I don't have any alligators here.
Alligators are cool. I like them. I don't like palmetto bugs.
Ugh, they're roaches with wings.
No, I can't. Like those things, any kind of creepy crawlies. I'm even fine with rodents. They're kind of cute. I just don't want to share a space with them, so I will humanely set them free.
Yeah. I'm fine with everything but a trash panda. You know I don't like a trash panda.
Oh, they're cute.
Oh, God, no. No, those are rats with hands.
No.
Rats with opposable thumbs.
Raccoons, unfortunately, are cute, but they're really, really big pets.
They're disgusting.
So they're not exactly doing it.
It's the only animal that I have that I take beef with in this world. It's the only animal that when I see is roadkill, I'm kind of like, eh. And normally if I see roadkill, I'm like, oh, like an armadillo or one of the ducks or whatever.
But I think when it's a trash like a really panda, bad experience like, with
I've
like
had really several bad trash panda experiences and none of them.
See, that's where it always comes from. It's always something.
I don't care. They're rats with hands and they're smart and they know how to open doors. And it's
what about cockroach versus a raccoon? Which one's worse?
Well, no, I'll tell you what. The raccoon is worse because I could just take a can of Raid and spray the cockroach and then that thing is dead and then I don't have to even feel bad and I could just throw it in the garbage. But you got a trash panda, I can't just kill it easily. I can't easily dispose of it. I can't. And I'm not making hats out of them.
Okay, so since we're into the creepy part of the conversation, what's the biggest rat you've ever seen in New York City?
I mean, like regularly, I see them this big.
Oh my God. Okay. So to me, that's a possum. Like that's
how. I've seen a possum too. I was walking, I actually was like in the beginning of my relationship with my partner, and we had just left a party in Sunnyside, and we walked outside and we were trying to get, I don't even know if Uber existed back then, maybe. We were trying to get a way home. And I saw something move out of the corner of my eye sitting up on a fence, like a big fence as tall as me. And I looked over and it was a possum looking at me perched on a fence. And I was like, what?
Wow.
But possums are good though. They eat bugs. They eat stuff like possums are, they have, they're possums are
so
good.
They're basically just like, So they're basically just like spiders. A lot of people hate spiders, but spiders are actually very useful.
Possums are our friends. Possums are our friends, and people get weirded out by them because they think they look like giant rats. Well, they kind of
do. My friend Thomas says raccoons are cute, and I agree. And personally, the only living thing that I have beef with, other than some humans, is a cockroach.
Interesting choice. So you are, so does that mean that you are vegan, vegetarian? Are you leaning more on that?
I am a hippie. I try to be vegan, but most of the time I'm just vegetarian. But cool. I am mostly, you can just call me a hippie.
Well, I'm definitely pescatarian all the way. And I really don't have much dairy. I think it's, you know, not too long ago I tasted a piece of chicken and I just realized that, I don't need to eat this anymore. It's just not worth it. And, you're pescatarian as well.
I am pescatarian. I really don't eat. I mean, my only thing that keeps me really from being vegan is cheese. And I don't really sit there and eat it a lot, but it's on things that I eat and I do like it. And I have a cognitive disconnect and I feel bad about it because I know how horrible the industry is. Like if it were just to go away, I'd miss it, but I'd be fine. Like I would live with it, but it's there. And I just, it's hard. It's definitely a hypocritical thing.
No, I definitely.
No, it's like, it's a whole thing. And when you're raised with something and it tastes good, I mean like a slice of pizza is great.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I mean, you are in New York City. I mean,
are you going to make her name her favorite pizza place?
Well, Diane.
Ellen B. Spumoni Gardens.
Spumoni Gardens is your favorite? Okay. All right. I can get along with that.
Where is that?
That's in
Bensonhurst?
It's in Brooklyn. I don't remember exactly the location, but it's not. I think it's close to Coney Island. I'm pretty sure that it is. So I've been there once. That was a long time ago. Diane said her favorite place is not Famous Ray's. I thought that was hysterical when she said that.
Not
I was
like, Famous
not
Ray's.
Not Famous Ray's. So
great.
Yeah. Yeah, if you like pizza, if you like bagel with cream cheese.
And I'm even fine doing vegan with that. The Trader Joe's vegan cream cheese is
not
fine.
A fan.
I don't care.
Well, I'm not a fan.
I don't mind. Great.
It doesn't, because for me, cream cheese is about the texture between the bagel and the Nova, right? Like it's the cream cheese, you're not eating it for itself. I don't, you know? So for me, it's
serves nice perfect. Five. Yum.
But love pizza chops. Is when it's vegan is gross. I'm sorry. I've not yet had one that I've really liked.
But you know, that's also one of the great things about living in a city like New York.
Yes, you get better options.
Yeah, if you want vegan, you're not only going to get vegan, you're going to get the best there is.
Yeah, so we don't have that.
Two Boots Pizza has really good vegan pizza. You can also get, I don't know, like, I don't care if I eat gluten or not, but some people do. You can get like a gluten-free crust with a vegan cheese, and it tastes so good.
It sounds like it would taste like a rice cake with like, you know, cardboard on it.
I thought so. I really thought so too. Happy Earth Day, Leonardo.
Happy Earth Day. Oh, hey, Leonardo.
He's a friend, local.
He is local friend. Yeah, today was Earth Day. Did you do anything for Earth Day today, Lauren?
Yes, I cleaned a community garden with my friends.
Excellent.
We have a very, very busy day packed for
tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow is kind of a ridiculous situation. Yeah. I'm going on with Steve Grumbine. You know Steve, right?
Yeah, you're talking about MMT?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a great guest to ever have. Like if you ever want to look through, like if you ever see any of the guests that we've had and you want a connection or an introduction, we'd be happy to connect you with anyone who's ever been on. Like I generally will like read a book and then reach out to an author. Cause I just did that the other day.
So. I read The Deficit Myth by Stephanie Kelly.
Not just.
Oh, no. Did you have Stephanie on?
No.
Haven't, but would.
But I just read this book called The Whiteness of Wealth. Highly recommend. Let me ask you your opinion on this. Can I say that I read something if I audibled it?
Yes. You
listen. That counts as reading even if it was listening?
You read it with your mind. And your
is that true? Okay, because I'm just saying, because like I referenced agree. It that I read it, but I'm like,
agree. I'll give you that
it
one.
Was lecture.
Well, because if like if somebody asked you what was the gist of the book,
oh yeah, no, I could go each chapter.
You could speak on it. Yeah. So then
saying I read it. So it's called The Whiteness of Wealth, and the woman's name is Dorothy Brown. If Dorothy Brown's listening to this, I sent you an email. I'd really like you to come on my show. She is a tax law professor at Emory. And this book just came out, and it's about the bias in our things like our tax codes.
Yeah.
Like stuff that is so deep rooted that it's so beyond just social structure. Like it's just so in there. And it's just, I never thought of a lot
That's
of these
That's why
things.
I always find it very interesting because I do believe that progressives and libertarians have a lot in common. They don't have everything in common, but there are a lot of things that they share. And one of the things that I always respected, even if I didn't fully agree with, that Rand Paul always preaches is simplifying the tax code. And one of the reasons you do that is because when you make it more complicated, that's when you can screw people.
It's really interesting. I highly recommend it. I mean, I know you don't have like a lot of free time, but I just power through, you know, like listening. It was so easy to listen to. I do very well with Audible with nonfiction. I haven't tried it with fiction. I don't think I would like that as much, but when it's nonfiction, it's almost like you're just getting a private lecture. That's what it feels like. And I'm doing Margaret Kimberly's book, Prejudicial. I'm listening that on Audible and she does her own work.
She's
so awesome. It's her talking. So
Cornel
West. So it's like when
that.
You, so it's almost like, I almost feel like it's better in those cases to hear it than it is to read it. For people that are really good speakers.
You know, the fact that you're in New York, if you have the opportunity, potential, like Margaret Kimberly is in New York.
Yes.
And if you have the opportunity, not only to come on, but you know, when it's appropriate, you know, potentially have like a studio situation where, you know, you can do like the back and forth.
And
she's definitely somebody.
Yeah. She's great. She would be a great guest. I don't know if you like are looking for different people.
I would love to hang out with her. If she can simplify my taxes. That would be great.
No, not Margaret. That's a different person.
Oh.
No, Margaret.
Margaret Kimberly is someone we had on, and she actually was also came back on for our Assange telethon. Mm-hmm. She has written several books, but the most recent one is called Prejudicial, and it goes through each chapter is a president, and it talks about it's really cool. And it goes through basically the different white supremacist things that happened under each term, even for the people that you thought weren't so bad, right? Like even for the presidents that weren't slaveholders and, you know, like it's just, it was really interesting.
Put kids in cages. Yep.
Yeah.
I love the book that I recently read is Mary Magdalene Revealed. It's really, it's like, it talks about how like religion, especially Christianity, has been totally influenced by the patriarchy that has twisted the words that we were supposed to have read. So I really recommend that for anyone who's like going through a journey. I am going through a journey this year and it's been enlightening.
So what are you doing? I mean, you know, you have your show and right now you're in political season, but when that's not going on, what are you doing? I mean, like, cause what did you do in your previous life?
Oh my gosh. I worked at a bank and I am not going back to that.
No.
Not once you find out how it operates.
Nope. Yeah, exactly.
So what are you going to really do? Because I mean, obviously, yes, I want all the best for you with the podcast, but clearly that's not a career move.
Yeah, no. Yes. I mean, I have a lot of questions. If anyone out there is hiring advocates,
what do you do? Like, what's your, I mean, obviously organizing and activism and stuff, but are you more of, like a PR kind of person? Or are you more like what aspect of stuff do you like get involved in?
Yeah, I love digital organizing and digital marketing and, any kind of advocacy for the movement. So if you need any of that, I'm right here at Vote Ashcraft.
How do you not like this lady?
No, right? Everyone likes Snorri.
I mean, a lot of people don't. A lot of people.
Well, really because she's sweet and cute and all that, you know, but she has a bite and she's going to say what it is. And so it's very pleasant. You kind of remind me a little bit of what's her name from Queen's Gambit.
I don't know.
Oh my God. That's so adorable.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. Is it Anya Taylor-Joy? Anya,
yeah. She, that, by the way, that's a great show. Highly recommend for everybody.
It's really good.
You watched it, right?
Yeah. It's really good.
But yeah, no, you have a very sweet and pretty face, but I know that you are not to be messed with.
I think more than anything else, it's the fact that you just really come off like an extremely positive person. Like you're really full of zest in life and stuff like that. And there's a lot of miserable people out there that when they see that, they find a reason not to like you because you're happy and they're miserable.
Oh my God. One time I posted a picture, I bought a used bike. From my neighbor who might be watching. She's very supportive of my endeavors. Thank you if you're watching. I bought her used bicycle and I got trolled for that. They said that I am a privileged banker.
That's a new one.
Bankers are not people that work at a bank.
Was a project manager who hated my life and my bicycle was the only thing that was bringing me happiness for a little bit. So thanks for that, guys. I'm just kidding. I'm good.
That's one of the hardest parts, you know, when you run for office is, especially as a woman, and especially if you're an attractive woman, I mean, you really have to put yourself out there. It is really
difficult. Well, I don't have that problem then.
But she will say things, like she'll say things very pleasantly with a smile, but it's going to still be speaking truth to power. And people don't like that. People don't like to be called on their crap. And even if you say it pleasantly, if it's not what they want to hear, they're not going to like you. And so Lauren's going to have haters, maybe not as many haters as we have because I'm not as nice as she is.
Well, Jen had a recent situation with some local people that are local activists who really, you know, took it extremely personal that Jen is against vaccine passports. It's like, it's one thing.
Speaking of traveling to other countries. Yeah. Okay. I get that we need different things to go to different countries.
But even if you disagree with it, they treat it as if like she's like a heretic.
Like I'm a crazy anti-vaxxer because I have civil liberty concerns.
It's one of the hardest parts about.
So this is a good question from Keith.
Yeah. I mean, having passports just reminds me very much of like, when the Nazis asked people to show their identification, which
it's
feels
creepy.
And I also think about, like people who maybe aren't here legally, which, I mean, I'm for open borders, which is another discussion for another time, but.
Right, but it's an extra thing that can only really penalize people.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not for open borders, but we could have that conversation. I'm not going to think you're a terrible person because that's what you believe or vice versa.
Right, I'm not going to cancel you because I don't agree with that. But people basically, they want to work backwards to their conclusion. They want to decide they don't like me. And then anything I say, they're going to find. You know what? Whatever. I don't care.
Put them up on the cancel board. Put them up on the bootlicker board.
Oh, we'll make bootlickers out of a lot of people. I got to tell you. And then I've got my private bootlickers. They'll be dealt with privately. I have amassed quite a list. I have quite a little list that I'm working on. And it's like, I think that for me, it's one of those things that it happens organically, that eventually, really truthfully, people do get what they have coming to them at the moment when they'd least expect it.
Well, like you said,
I am a firm believer in karma.
But there's also people who are
karma
just
karma is real.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And
oh, yeah.
That is more or less what you like to say, which is people are simply standing in the way of progress.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem. It's one thing if you disagree with something, but there's really this. I would say probably the biggest problem in politics is there is a sense of self-righteousness that a lot of people feel. And having that feeling is infinitely more important than actually getting something done.
Yeah.
Dealing with all of the problems that exist right now. Listen, it's not the end all be all, but I look at it this way. If Bernie and Pramila are able to get tuition-free public college through for families making less than $125,000 a year, that is a significant step in the right direction. And that could lead to the next rung on the ladder, which could become $250,000 until eventually it just becomes universal and everybody has it. If we are able right now to lower the Medicare age to 60, just that is going to get like 17 million people in this country healthcare. And if it goes to 55, it's like 30 million people.
Yeah, it's a chunk.
So the amount of momentum that things like that can create is tremendous. And so mm-hmm. when we see and this is not about incrementalism. This is about, because we're fighting so hard for what we believe in, we're going to force their hand to give us something. Because if they don't, I would rather have that than have nothing. That isn't incrementalism. That's making sure that once you cross that ladder, or that rung on the ladder, you are going to create so much momentum. The idea now that universal healthcare is part of the common vernacular, that we talk about it all the time, not that, wow, wouldn't it be great to get it? It's, we're going to get it. It's just a question of when we get it. That's the attitude that we have created, that I think the Bernie movement has created. And one of the last things that I think we can, kind of leave on is, you know, we want AOC to be able to do all of these things. But truthfully, I think if Nina gets to Congress, that is going to take so much pressure off of AOC to have to really be that charging force for the progressive movement. I think Nina wants to be.
I think more importantly, we should ask Lauren, if GenCorp were to rent a house for the month of July in Ohio, you should come visit and help Team Nina. Gosh,
I would love that. I would.
So that's one of the things I want to do is rent a house for GenCorp from July 5th to August 5th and be there to help Team Nina.
That sounds great. Let me know about that.
Definitely.
No, we're
and also, by the way, if you are available, we will be having a live stream, our Thursday night live stream on May 13th, which will be for my 50th birthday. And so I'm doing a like three hour live stream fundraiser that we're kind of working on putting together.
Well, my birthday is May 6th. I don't know if we're going to do it.
No one cares.
Yeah, no one cares.
I'm 50, dude. Seriously.
I'm not.
So I'm going to do it. I want to do it. And I'm going to obviously try to raise money for our little volunteer organization.
Our website is about to go up.
And so that would be really good. But yeah, so if you're available, I'd love to include you in my little, come and go online cocktail party is what it will be.
Of course.
I'll just come and mingle, and then we'll have some entertainment and, see if we can get people to do some stuff.
I love that.
And if you have a comedian.
Yes. Well, that's.
You can definitely do a bit, because we were also going to ask other people to do bits.
Yes. We do have.
Judah Friedlander.
Yeah.
Kate Willett.
Kate Willett's awesome.
I love Kate. We're friends. And also, Judah Friedlander doesn't know it yet, but is going to be working with me creatively on something. So.
Well, the best.
He's so bright.
He is.
Like, First of all, I think in general, comedians tend to be bright. I think you have to sort of twist things in your head. No, I do. I think that there is a certain way of looking at things and analyzing things that, you know, or at least the people that I find funny. Well, there might be people that think they're funny, but they're not funny, but you know, I don't know.
Well, credit also to David Cross, because he's been...
David Cross was a good guest for us, too.
David's wonderful, too.
Yeah, he's been a big supporter of Jen, and he was one of the first guests on the podcast, and the fact that he was willing to do that, you know, really says a lot. I mean, there are good people out there.
If you see any of our guests and you want to, like, poach or ask, I'll be happy to connect.
Yeah, because this because this is how you pay it forward. We've
established quite a little library of fun.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Thank you. No, I'm so excited. That's really cool. I love all those people.
Yeah, we have a nice little library that we've accumulated. And I, you know, a lot of times it's people that maybe you don't know, but it could have been a book that I just thought was really cool or, you know.
I'm in that library now. And now I feel very cool, like I'm a book.
Yeah, you are. You're not the Kente cloth tales, but you're a book.
No, but there is this, what you would call... changing of the guard.
Yeah.
Even if it isn't happening nearly as quickly as we would like it to. But as we conclude every show, we always ask our guests, what does generational change mean to you?
Oh my gosh. I think that generational change is hope. Because I mean, I really tried to unseat someone who's been in office for a very long time. But it's chipping away at that. Little bits at a time, and now JD's endorsed somebody in my district, and I hope that she wins. So I think, you know, it's been a tough pill to recover from the loss. I know, Jen, you probably are still healing too.
It was expected for me. I was infinitely more prepared to lose than I was to win.
Yeah, well, same in a way. I just, you know, you get hope whenever you see people like really showing up. So I've been really healing from that. This is really a therapy session for me. You might think that this is a podcast.
It's therapy. Really,
you guys are actually just my therapists now.
So Lauren, I'm working on this book. And it's basically, I'm calling it Love and Chaos in a Political Pandemic, but it's really like an insurgent's guide to running a campaign, okay? And one of the things that I talk about is this, something that I have noticed. People that can be successful at this have to have two key things. You have to have a small ego and thick skin.
Yeah.
And you need to have both of those things simultaneously. Yep. And that's not a common combination of factors. Usually when you get the people that have small egos, it's because they care more about other people. They're more in it and they're sensitive. So they probably don't have the thickest skin. So then you get people in there with really, really thick skin that don't care what anybody thinks, but they probably also have massive egos that feel the need to take credit for everything instead of working on the issues.
And the best example, the best example I ever saw of that, I always reference it because it's one of those seminal moments where I don't know how Nina Turner kept it together when Hillary Rosen basically went full racist on her on national television.
Oh, did you see that? It was a while ago. It was like a year or so ago.
A comment about how you don't have a right to speak on behalf of Martin Luther King.
And this white woman told Nina, this white woman on an interview,
this is one of Hillary Clinton's biggest confidants in all of politics.
Told Nina, they were talking, said, you don't have standing to quote Dr. King.
And Nina,
let me tell you, see the look on Nina's face.
But if you saw the way Nina handled that, I don't know how she did it. I don't know how she handled it.
If they were in the same room, I don't know.
Well, no.
I don't know.
She wouldn't say that.
Oh my gosh. Well, I will come to the generational change house.
We will make sure you look, you will be more than welcome there. And we will definitely send you a link for my birthday.
Yay!
And
guys, one more time before we conclude, remember it is Lauren Ashcraft Biting Commentary. That is on
I need
YouTube.
1,000 subscribers so that I can get live stream auto captioning. Which
is that how that works?
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Like, we know certain milestones you need. We need to get to 10,000 subscribers to be able to have a merch store. Like, it's like a game. You have to get X amount of points to get the bonus.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes, everybody subscribe, writing commentary. And also, once you get monetized, you'll be convincing people to let the ads run.
Yeah. It's a whole process, but it's a great process. And like I said, we definitely want to make sure that everyone who's fighting for the right causes is going to have their opportunity to make their mark.
Yes.
Because, you know, we're getting, I mean, look, if you had any idea how suppressed our channel is.
Oh, yeah. So no, it's, and you, well, no, you'll get it. You'll inevitably get it because you're going to see things and do things. And also, once you start posting clips and stuff, there is definitely an art to thumbnails and captions and what and which things will get you pushed to the bottom of the pile on YouTube.
Oh no.
Oh yes. You don't want to say anything negative about, like, you know, Amazon, or you will be at the bottom of the barrel on the algorithm. Like, there's certain things, like Big Brother.
Yeah, like when I have to you know, when you hear people like Joe Scarborough and Deutsch, oh, he's the freaking worst. Them coming on TV saying, you know, we really needed to have Amazon in Queens. It's like, this is nuts. But when
Screw Donnie Deutsch, that total douche. And you know, Donnie Douche.
Here's a guy who was as anti-Trump as it gets, but it's because in his subliminal mind, he knows he's just like Trump. He's only where he is because his daddy let him get there. Yeah. He was a total product of his father. And like a lot of these guys are. You know how self-conscious so many of these guys are who don't actually make it on their own? So that would be a great example. But nevertheless, if you're not part of the corporate establishment, if what you preach is anti-establishment,
you can come on our show.
Oh,
and you can come on our show.
Yes.
This is Lulu. She generally makes at least one appearance per show. As long as I like pick her up periodically and she sits here and be happy, then she'll go and lie back down in her
Lulu is
bed.
Just
I
letting us know. Lulu is just letting us know that the latest episode.
She likes cats, actually. Lulu gets very along well with the feline.
Let me see if I can get Paul to bring my cat to me.
That's so funny. I did that with Vosh. Remember Vosh? Yeah. Vosh. Do you know who Vosh is, right?
Yes.
Okay. So he came on. He was a great guest, but he has a hairless cat, which I think looks inside out. But, you know.
Oh. Did you say he has a hairless?
He has a hairless.
Yes.
Well, he has two,
but the one that he held up is this hairless cat.
Listen, the podcast that they did together, I mean, that's
what really... We more than doubled our subscribers from him coming on my show.
That's what really gave us the boost.
So pay attention to who you invite on and have them retweet when they come on and try to get as many followers.
And just
what if I have this cat on?
Oh, that's so cute.
He has a string.
It's so cute. See? Yeah. And people like pets.
Hello.
Can I just have a live stream of me going like this?
People will like pets. I actually watch this Life with Malamutes family. I love them. I watch Save a Fox. Save a Fox is one of my favorite YouTube shows. It makes me want a fox.
Can you tell it like that?
Well, when you get to live out in the country, you can
basically do whatever you want. But you like dogs too, right?
Yeah. Well, I love all animals, really. I would probably cuddle a rat, though. Yeah,
but having a dog in New York City, if you don't have space,
every time I see dogs being walked in the city, I don't feel bad for them, but because they don't know any better, but I kind of do, especially the little ones that are like walking and it's freezing outside and they have little jackets on and I don't know.
Oh, you got like, to protect them.
My dogs don't like to go out if it's wet outside. They look at me like, oh, hell no.
There's a whole industry of like dog walkers. And I will say some New York dogs have like more steps on their pedometer than like country dogs.
Yeah, but they're just leashed and they don't get to run. I don't know. I just feel kind of like, and they spend so much time walking on concrete and I don't know. Kind of like, I don't know. Anyway.
New York City.
Thank you so much for coming on, Lauren. And
thank you.
And let us know how else we can help.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Definitely give me if you like biting commentary, please subscribe. And I can't wait to come to your birthday party.
Yeah. All right, John, make sure you add Lauren to the list of people to get the invite.
Have a great night, my friend. Great to see you. And we'll definitely
be in touch.
Enjoy Florida.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.